Did you ever feel like what you learned in law school didn't prepare you for the world of running a law practice? Law school didn't teach us how to start our practices the right way so that we could scale them into a thriving business. We didn't learn how to make sure that our businesses would meet our financial goals and provide the type of lifestyle we deserve. After 10 years, I was fed up with struggling in my practice and decided to begin a journey to scaling a successful practice that would actually allow me to finally live the life I've always dreamed of. I invite you to listen in on the conversations I'm having with some of the most successful solo and small firm practitioners, along with leading business entrepreneurs, and share how I am implementing what I am learning, all with the goal of helping you take control of your practice and your life. This is The Law Entrepreneur. Hey there, fellow law entrepreneurs. Welcome to episode 91 of The Law Entrepreneur. I'm Neil Tyra, your host, as usual. Today, my guest is business coach Jeff Miller. Jeff works in the Washington, D.C. area here, as I said, as a business coach. I first became aware of Jeff through a previous guest of ours, Eric Wexler. Back on episode 73, Eric talked about a coach that he was working with. And then I was having breakfast with an attorney doing some networking here in the local area. And this gentleman comes up to the table and says hello to my breakfast guest and introduces himself as Jeff Miller. And I put two and two together and I realized that that's the Jeff Miller who is the business coach, and find out that he provides those services to a number of attorneys in the area. So we sat down, had lunch ourselves the other day, and decided that he'd make a great guest here on The Law Entrepreneur. He has his own podcast called The Jeff Miller Show. So if you are so inclined, go over to iTunes and search on Jeff Miller. You'll find his podcast. Give it a listen. And if you're so inclined, you know, leave a positive rating and review. But in any case, I think you're going to enjoy this conversation here with Jeff, because we really talk about what role does a coach play and why is that important and how can attorneys benefit from coaching. I get off on a little martial arts tangent there a few times, so I apologize in advance for that. But in any case, I hope that you enjoy this conversation with my friend Jeff Miller. Jeff Miller, welcome to The Law Entrepreneur.
Neil, thanks. Great to be here. Thanks for having me.
Well, I appreciate you taking the time to be with us today. Jeff, tell our audience a little bit about yourself and how you came to be where you are today.
Sure. It's been an interesting ride. I grew up in a family of entrepreneurs. My dad was a retailer in Manhattan, had a shop in the shadows of the World Trade Center. And growing up in family-owned business, you're always aware of the ups and the downs, just how integrated it becomes into the family life. At a certain point, I started working for a sales company. I worked my way up. I was VP of sales, and I did that for about 20 years. In 2002, my mom and dad passed away somewhat unexpectedly within 7 months of each other.
Oh, wow.
Which is, we go through it. I would have been nice to have had them for a little bit longer. But what was interesting was, as I was going through that process, I was 45. I was unhappy at what I was doing, and I realized that life is really short. And I wanted to get involved in something of my own where I could have a direct impact on my community. I had become completely disconnected from the community. I actually quit my job, not knowing what I was going to do, but decided again to be on my own and started looking, was contacted, and was introduced to a franchise, a business coaching franchise at the time. This was 2003. Didn't have a whole lot of traction. Business coaching is then. Now you walk into a room and half the room are coaches.
Isn't that the truth?
Yeah. But I understood that it was a vehicle for me to get involved with my local community, with business owners, guys like my dad, and really have an impact. Because I understood if you can impact the life of a business owner, then that has a ripple effect within the family, within the schools, and within our community. So that's sort of what got me. That is what got me involved, and really was able to pay back. I look back on some of the things I've been able to do. I've been the chairman of the Rockville Chamber of Commerce. I've been the president of Mana Food Center, which is Montgomery County's food bank. I'm the past president of the Corporate Volunteer Council. I'm a graduate of Leadership Montgomery, class of 14. I do some pro bono work up at the prison. And I say all this because it all leads to what my firm belief is that as business owners, we have an obligation to create community and to give back to the communities that we live in. And I was able to achieve all this through the vehicle of business coaching.
You know, I think it just speaks volumes that before you even started listing some of the things that you've done here in our local community, that you articulated the fact that you entered into this business coaching space out of a desire to build community and out of a desire to reach out and help others. You know, I'm going to surmise that if your viewpoint had been internal rather than external from the start, you probably wouldn't have been nearly as successful.
Yeah, I agree. You know, it's interesting because I do have occasion now and then to coach new coaches who are getting into the business. And even if I'm not coaching them, I always invite, you know, folks to, you know, give me a call. I'm happy to discuss what coaching is like from the inside. And the first question I ask is, why are you doing it?
Yeah.
Because if the motivation isn't a pure from the heart motivation, you're going to burn out really quick and you're not going to be as successful as you could be otherwise.
And I think people see that if your motivation is internal, if it's all about you as the coach, they're really going to wonder whether or not the advice that you're giving them is geared towards helping you as the client or promoting them as the coach.
Mm-hmm. You know? Clearly, I know that I'm most effective in my coaching when I leave my ego at the door. Because as a coach, it's never about you. It's always about the client. And even if you see things for the client that they may not see, if it's not the direction they want to go in, you've got to recognize that and you need to respect it.
Now, one of the reasons that I've asked you to be on our show here is that I know that several of your clients have been past guests on The Law Entrepreneur, and they speak highly of you as a coach. How did you get involved with expanding your client base to include the legal community?
Yeah, it's a great question, because initially I did not market to the legal community.
Well, I think a lot of times business coaches don't view law firms as really, you know, a business that needs coaching, and that's changing rapidly through mm-hmm. as a result of the work of folks like yourself. So what was it, just happenstance or luck or what?
It was a little bit of both. What was very important to me when I started the business was to make sure that the methodology that I'm using and the processes and the systems that I employ worked across on a horizontal plane. In other words, I wasn't interested in becoming a coach to any one specific industry. What I was interested in was coaching people who wanted to get to that next level and who understood the importance of self-investment and continual learning. So that became my barometer. And while I didn't market specifically to attorneys, they showed up. and over the course of the years, I probably have coached almost, I don't know, 7, 8, 9, 10 attorneys, different firms. And an attorney who recognizes that they're great at what they do, but that they may not have taken that how to run a firm course in law school, are just great attorneys, are great clients. They commit to the program. They're able to put their egos aside and admit what they don't know and where we want to go. And coaching is fantastic for me because we go to all kinds of places. It's not just about building the business, although that's always the center of it. It's also when you're most effective as a coach, you also become really an advisor. And that's a very sweet spot to be when you get a call from a client and says, "Hey, Jeff, I know we don't, you know, this isn't what we pay you for, but I'm having this issue with my kid. What do you think?" And that's pretty, it's touching. It's moving.
Well, I think that in some respects, maybe this is my own naivete or ego talking, but I would think that attorneys would be great clients for you because, one, and it's the reason that I have this podcast, one, and they don't teach you how to run a business in law school. And so if you find yourself running a solo or small firm practice, if you haven't had previous business experience, you're going to learn as you go along. And sometimes you can afford those mistakes, and oftentimes you can't. So a coach is invaluable in that scenario. And then secondly, I like to think that attorneys are always in the mode of, there's more for me to learn, and I need to invest in myself. So those two kinds of principles, I think, would create an ideal client for somebody like yourself.
Exactly. And one of those reasons, it's you know, something I talk about a lot in workshops and with clients as well. You know, real learning in life happens when you're willing to ask yourself, okay, what don't I know now? And those are the clients that I love, because they understand, okay, let's get to that next level. Because the only way to get there is saying, what don't I know now? What do I need to master now? And really having the it's an honor. It's really an honor to be able to work with people who have that kind of view, who have that kind of motivation to just get better, to always be improving. It's not even getting better. It's going from good to great. You know, it's just that internal drive to be as good, as great as you can be. And as a coach, that's what I get to experience with my clients. And what's interesting with my attorney clients is they tend to stay with me a very, very long time. I've got one client in Rockville who we've been working together probably 10 years now. You know, the relationship changes a little bit, but still to be part of that firm after all these years and seeing, you know, all the maturation and where we were then to where we are now is just incredibly fulfilling for me as a coach, and it's really an honor.
Well, you know, one of the things that I learned in my martial arts experience back before I became an attorney is that there's always somebody out there who's bigger, stronger, tougher, faster. If you don't recognize that, you're going to get hurt. and I carried that over into my legal practice to say that, you know, there's always somebody out there who's, you know, smarter, more experienced, more articulate, better prepared. And if you can't learn from that, you're going to get hurt.
Agree. I mean, I always say, I really never want to be the smartest guy in the room.
Yeah.
And so, you know, again, I tell coaches that if, as a coach, you need to be working with a coach. I've had a coach for the 14 years that I've been in business, you know, different coaches through the years. The last one, he's been coaching me for the last 4 or 5 years. And it does a couple of things. Number one, we don't see our own blind spots, but it also keeps you humble to the experience of what it's like to be coached.
Yeah.
It's important. It's not every week do you want to see a coach, but he shows up anyway. So you got to get down and do the work.
Yeah, for sure. Now you mentioned that you wanted to make sure that your process, that your practice would stretch across horizontally multiple industry verticals, but I'm assuming that it's not a one-size-fits-all cookie-cutter approach to coaching. How do you adapt across the various clients that you have?
Yeah, great question. And again, it's one of the reasons why over time I gravitated away from the franchise that I had bought, because it's not cookie-cutter. And what I understood early on is that, yeah, you're coaching a business, but you're coaching a business owner. And you've got to recognize that that's a person. And it's not just about the numbers. It's not just about the marketing. It's not just about the sales process or the chart of accounts. I mean, we get into all of that. But if I'm not able to tap into who that person is, then we don't get to where we need to get to. And I think when I recognized that early on and started understanding, okay, so what are the things that hold people back as business owners? And typically it's going to be some kind of self-limiting belief, you know, something that's holding you back, whether it's about success or money, whatever those things are. And those are the issues that we deal with as we're going through the process. You can't ignore the elephant in the room. And I think that's what's made me as successful as I am. It's funny. Just a quick story, if you don't mind. I've got a client who's a bookkeeping service, Arrow Bookkeeping. I've been working with Linda Cahill for years now, I think probably since 2006. And I'll never forget the very first time that I showed up for our very first appointment. I came with my binder, and I gave her a binder, and she looked at the binder and said, "Oh, no, 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 you're not cookie cutting me." And she put the binder aside. And that was a pretty profound lesson that I learned that day. I'll never forget. It was a Tuesday morning. And it was like, yeah, you can't, because they're people. And you've got to be able to tap into that. You've got to be able to build the trust and the confidence that allows that relationship to go deep. And I know that for me, the kind of client retention that I have, the relationships that I have, it's because I'm able to tap into the person, and then we get into the business.
This episode of The Law Entrepreneur is sponsored by Market Circle, the makers of Daylight. Do you want to help more clients but don't have the resources? Do you feel overwhelmed by the amount of work to do that you can't even think about getting new clients? If this is you, I urge you to try out Daylight. Daylight is the Mac CRM that streamlines your practice and can save you hours of work each week. Daylight has helped thousands of small businesses, including my own, to manage more clients and cases without adding stress nor chaos. With Daylight, you don't need to fumble through files or notes to know where you are in a case. There's no more CCing your assistant on emails or passing around spreadsheets. Because Daylight now has a new team view that helps you see what everyone in your firm is working on. You can see everyone's appointments and tasks and easily schedule meetings for the entire team or a portion thereof. To learn how Daylight can help your firm, visit marketcircle.com/daylight. Be sure to let them know you heard about Daylight through The Law Entrepreneur to get a 50% discount on your first monthly subscription. That's Market Circle, the makers of Daylight. This episode is also brought to you by my friends at Spotlight Branding. I trust them to manage the internet presence for my law firm, and I recommend them to solo lawyers every chance I get. They built a great website for me, and they use video marketing, social media, email marketing, and more to keep me top of mind with my referral network. Visit spotlightbranding.com to learn more. They're even offering a free gift for podcast listeners, which you can access at spotlightbranding.com/TLE, as in The Law Entrepreneur. Spotlightbranding.com/TLE, brought to you by our friends at Spotlight Branding. You know, your story reminds me, again, I don't know why today is martial arts day in my head, but reminds me that there's an old martial arts saying that the teacher must always be a student. Mm-hmm. And so you're always learning from your students. And in this case, you're always learning from your clients. Having said all that, it's not a cookie cutter approach. It's not a standard one size fits all process. Tell us a little bit about how you go about coaching. What kind of path do you follow in mm-hmm. general? What are the steps, and how does sure. it actually manifest itself?
So the way the relationship unfolds is, the first thing I have a new client do is take an online assessment that I've been working with for the last 10 years or so. It's psychometric testing. So I got involved in it because I'm able to use it with clients in the hiring process. It can be part of the interview.
Is psychometric testing a methodology, or is it a product, or both?
No, it's both. It's a product, but it was developed about 30 years ago, and it's based on science, as opposed to, like, you know, four quadrant personality, you know, like DISC or things like that.
No, those things I hate.
Yeah, well, and this is great because...
Sorry, was that my outside voice?
I think so.
No, sorry.
It measures thinking style, which tells us about rate of learning and training and communication. Then it looks at 9 or 10 behavioral aspects, and then it looks at occupational interest. And when I started working with the tool, what I realized is that if I have a new client take it, it does two things. It ramps me up. What used to take me 3 months to learn about a client, it ramps me up pretty immediately. And it also gives us somewhat of an objective language that we can use and refer to. So that's the very first thing that I have a new client do. And then we do an old-fashioned interview, anywhere from 2 to 4 hours, where I ask about, you know, a very guided interview, but I ask about personal goals, I ask about business goals, and I ask about current business challenges. And a lot of the work I mean, I know we're always going to be working on issues of time, team, money, leverage, those kinds of things. I'm never quite sure the order that we're going to be working on. Though that in-depth interview gives me that the beginning, the roadmap, if you will, of what the first couple of months are going to look like and what we're going to be working on. And then I've got very specific exercises and different kinds of assessments that I use to deal with, whether it's time management issues, whether it's getting into systematic challenges that a firm may be having, a business may be having, process, what's happening with its team. We'll get into all of that, but again, in a very methodical, controlled way. I always tell people that for the most part, my program is structured. It's, you know, it, from a compensation standpoint, for the most part, it's month to month. But I always ask people to make a 12 to 24 month commitment in their mind, because this is not a sprint. It is a marathon. And for change to be firm and to really take hold, it has to happen over a period of time. It can't just happen overnight.
So you start with the psychometric testing as a tool to help you understand the client and the client's needs. And then you go to this in-depth interview, and then you do a bunch of different assessments based on what the perceived need is. Is that kind of the general flow?
Yeah. And we, you know, we get very involved in the business itself.
Right.
So, you know, for instance, one of my attorney clients, you know, we started looking at how much pro bono work he was doing.
Right.
Because however much he thought he was doing, he was actually doing a lot more.
Isn't that the truth?
You know, so we need to look at that and say, okay, well, you know, we have a firm to run. We've got salary and payroll to make. We need to kind of look at that pro bono, and I'm all for pro bono. I do it myself, but let's do it in a structured way. Let's understand at least how much of our time we're giving away.
Yeah. I like to tell folks there's a formal pro bono endeavors, and then there's informal pro bono endeavors. And you generally speaking find that we spend a whole lot more time informally doing pro bono work than actually taking on a formal pro bono client.
Yeah, it's interesting, isn't it?
Yeah, it's unbelievable. I want to get back at some point here to limiting beliefs, but you mentioned that's an obstacle. Is that the biggest obstacle that attorneys have to working with a coach?
The obstacle that folks have working with a coach, even now, after all these years and with it being such an accepted profession now, with small entrepreneurs, whether they're attorneys or not, there's still somewhat of a stigma attached to it.
Really?
Sometimes. It's like, well, I'm not broken. I don't need a coach. And, you know, what I always tell people, I don't work with people who need a coach. I work with people who want a coach. And the difference is not, it's subtle, but it's profound. If you look at any top performer in any field, athletics, you know, theater, music, the top performers are always working with a coach. Why wouldn't you want to get better? It's why I work with a coach. Why wouldn't I want my game to be better? So that's the obstacle.
Interesting, because I would have, if you'd asked me to guess as to what the biggest obstacle for attorneys would be, I would have said that it's their inability to recognize that a coach has a positive ROI, return on investment.
Well, I mean, I can demonstrate that up front. So, you know, I as part
okay,
of...
Okay, you can overcome that.
Yeah, because, I mean, that's just a matter of, it's your point is salient and it's spot on. If a coach doesn't pay for themselves within the first 3 months, then the relationship's not working. You know, I think you need to be very clear on selling coaching is difficult, but dealing with the obstacles or the objections are relatively easy for me in that I've got 14 years of experience doing this. I kind of know going in, you know, what am I going to have to hit upon in order to make this relationship of value to both myself and the prospect that I'm sitting across from. What's interesting about attorneys and this is really shocking. So with this assessment that I use, this assessment tool, one of the things that it measures is objective judgment. So how objective are you being in your decision-making process as opposed to subjective, right? So from the gut or from the head. And studies show that the profession which is the most subjective but views itself as being objective are attorneys.
I have no trouble believing that. And it's because we always think we're right.
Exactly. And the first question an attorney asks is, can I win the case? Which is a pretty subjective question to ask. So when I read that, I began to understand that, yeah, I really would like to work with attorneys, because if I can tap into that, then we can really do some great stuff together. You know, small attorneys, whether it's a solo shop or whether it's a smaller firm, they, you know, you get involved in the day-to-day, you're busy, you, before you know it, you pick up your head and it's 15 years later. And what's the exit strategy? What are we doing with bringing people in as partners or as equity partnerships? And those are the questions that don't get asked often until it's too late in the game or it's later in the game. So, with attorney clients specifically, that's always something that I want to tap into early, just so that I understand.
Yeah, I think you're spot on with that, because my sense is that coaching oftentimes is really focused on how do we get this process up and running and get you efficient and make your life easier so you can, you know, spend more time with your family and earn the income you want to earn. But very seldom do I hear, and you were one of the first when we met before, who suggested to me that a question you have to deal with right up front is, what's going to happen to your firm after you're gone?
Mm-hmm.
What's your exit strategy, and what's your contingency strategy? What are you going to do if, God forbid, you go into the hospital for an extended period of time, or your ability to function is otherwise limited? And I agree with you. I think those questions aren't asked nearly enough.
Yeah. It's again something with all clients, we talk about short, mid, and long-term goals. And long-term goals can be 5 to 10 years out, depending on the maturation of the business and where you're at. But with attorneys especially, I find sometimes that they don't have the time or the ability to really sit down and work on that five-year vision. You know, I've got too many files on my desk. I can't be worried about a five-year vision or where do I want to be in 10 years. And the fact is that we're going to be somewhere in 5 or 10 years. So, you know, my thing is always how active can we be in that outcome as opposed to passively getting there? And all of a sudden you pick up your head and it's, wow, I'm 65. Where'd all that time go? And what am I going to do now?
Yeah, no kidding.
So I go back to attorneys that I work with. They have the desire and they have the hunger to be more in control of where they're going as a business, as a firm. And that, I think, ultimately is why attorneys bring me on board. You know, again, they great clients for me, as we said before, is, you know, what don't I know and how do I get that knowledge and education? And, you know, do I need to bring somebody like a coach in order to do that?
I want to start and wrap up here with circling back to something that you said that I've been thinking about recently a lot more. And you mentioned limiting beliefs. And, you know, probably every podcast or every webinar or every book I've read has had, you know, some part of it devoted to trying to understand what our limiting beliefs are and how they get in our way. And I got to confess to you, I'm not sure that I either understand that at a gut level or believe that that's really true. So in your experience, what role is limiting beliefs played in kind of hampering an individual's progress as a business owner?
Yeah, so let me come at it from two different ways. One of the major issues that we're facing today, and certainly in America, but I think in Western society, is we're not very mindful of where we are. We're not very in the moment. And as a coach, you need to be thinking forward, but you also need to be thinking present. And I think as people in general, when you're not present, there's all kinds of opportunity that you miss. That's a whole nother subject, but I just wanted to put that in there. Limiting beliefs, we tend to overthink them. They're typically something that happens within the family structure. It's typically something that happens when we're young. We get put into a certain role within the family unit. And they're pretty basic. It's, I'm not good enough. I'm not smart enough. I don't deserve it. It's really those kind of base issues. Now, that doesn't mean that we're flawed. It doesn't mean that we can't succeed, because we can and we do. But if you think about if there's a belief that you have from the time that you're five, and now I'm 59, and I'm going to let a five-year-old dictate where I am now or where I want to be. So recognizing that, I think it's a matter of having just mindfulness around it, and it's a belief system. So is that belief that you're not smart enough? And if it is, and this is a classic example, because you can't just tell yourself that you're smart enough, right? Because your brain's going to go, come on, Jeff, I know you a long time. You can't just flip it. But I can reframe it. And here's some coaching around it. It's not I'm smart enough. It's if I prepare for this meeting and if I do the work, then I'll be able to accomplish what I want to accomplish. And over time, that's how you deal with limiting beliefs. It just becomes, it's that reframing. It's that if-then reframe. And it's really interesting because these beliefs, they cost us. There's a real cost in terms of the health and the business and profit and relationships and sleep. You know, those are the things that keep us up at night. And if I'm able to impact on that with a client, and I usually am, then we can get to really great places.
Yeah, I guess my questioning in this area stems from most of the entrepreneurs that I have met are anything but limited in their beliefs. If anything, we believe anything's possible. And sometimes are disappointed that we aren't realizing that success. So I'm still struggling with that a little bit, Jeff. I'll be honest with you.
Okay. I think one way to look at it is, first of all, there's a duality. As you know, there's nothing that's black and white. And certainly one can have a belief that I can accomplish anything, but then what's holding you back? So there's a great exercise that I work with, with clients. I work with the guys up at the prison. I do pro bono work with. It's called Be, Do, Have. And the exercise is you list out all the things you want to have, right? And that's pretty easy. We can do that. And then you go to the do list and say, what are the things I need to do? And we can usually correlate that too. And if not, we can ask people for advice. So if you know what you want to have and you know what you need to do, but you're not doing it, then it's a question of the be. Who do I need to be? And that's a question of identity. And that's a question of belief systems. So maybe that helps a little bit in terms of trying to articulate what it is you're asking, because it's a really important question. Having a limiting belief doesn't mean you're not successful. It just looks at what's holding you back and how do I liberate myself from what's holding me back.
Well, I like that kind of turn the periscope around approach, because it does get to the point of who do I need to be right now, mm-hmm. In order to achieve that desired outcome.
Yeah, and what's beautiful about that exercise in particular, because we can get lost in that self-help be journey, but you have to do as well, because if you're just being, you're still not going to get what you want to have because you stop doing.
You have to connect those pieces together. Yeah,
absolutely. And that's the duality of always working on that. And it's a great exercise. I mean, I do it at least once a year, and I review it during the course of the year if something's not quite working out the way I thought it was going to. And it's typically a just readjustment of the beat.
Well, listen, Jeff, we could sit down and we could talk about this for a lot longer, but I'm mindful of your time. tell our audience a little bit about how they can reach out to you personally if they want to continue this conversation and maybe take advantage of the resources that you have to offer. What's the best way?
Best way is my email address is jeff@jmconsultingalliance. Phone number is 703-963-6034. And, you know, from my perspective, it's about having conversations with people. And I'm always happy to have that conversation. It's always something I learn from. And typically the person I'm sitting across from learns something as well. And if something further develops, great. But if not, we both will have gotten value from the time that we spent together.
You know, and I'm just going to add on to that, that people say that all the time. But I know for a fact from folks who have spent time chatting with you, that's a truism. So that's just not lip service that you're providing, that you really are happy to just simply have that conversation. And if something happens, something happens. So, Jeff, it's been great having you on the show. I want to thank you for taking the time, and let's go have coffee again together shortly.
Sounds great, Neil, and thank you. Appreciate the opportunity, and also enjoyed the conversation a whole lot.
And thanks for being on The Law Entrepreneur.
Take care.
Once again, I'd like to thank our friends at Market Circle, the makers of Daylight and Spotlight Branding, for being sponsors of today's podcast. Market Circles, as the makers of Daylight, provide the tool that I use to manage my cases, my clients, my calendar, my to-dos, the emails, and they do so all in one app that stays with me on my Mac, my iPhone, and my iPad. I use Daylight on my own in a solo environment, but you can also use it in a team. You can use Daylight to track the status of cases and delegate tasks to one another on your team, and you can see everyone's schedule all without having to interrupt anyone. Daylight is one of the tools that I use to stay organized, and it increases my efficiency, and therefore it only stands to reason that it'll do the same for you and your team if you use it in a broader environment. So visit marketcircle.com/daylight to try Daylight free for 30 days. And be sure to let them know that you heard about Daylight through The Law Entrepreneur in order to get a 50% discount on your first monthly subscription. Also, our friends at Spotlight Branding, as always, have been very helpful in sponsoring this podcast. You know, I trust them to manage the internet presence for my law firm, and I recommend them to solo lawyers every chance I get. They built a great website for me, and they use video marketing, social media, email marketing, and more to help keep me top of mind with my referral network. So visit www.spotlightbranding.com to learn more. They're even offering a free gift for podcast listeners, which you can access at spotlightbranding.com/TLE, as in The Law Entrepreneur. So spotlightbranding.com/TLE to access your free gift. And as always, make sure that you visit our website, www.thelawentrepreneur.com, to see everything that's going on with the podcast and subscribe to our newsletter so that you can stay in the know and be the first on your block, so to speak, to gain insight into what's going on here. So once again, thanks for being here this time around. I appreciate your listenership. Hope to see you again next week on The Law Entrepreneur.